to another whiteboarding session here on the Subscribe blog. And so today it's about identity and access control. Identity and access control mostly related to architecture and not necessarily all that much related to all the security things or lots of obscure, terrifying security acronyms. I'm going to try to avoid most of them and explain the architectural impact of identity and access control decision you make in your system. To do that, we will go and investigate some methods of establishing identity. So there's two terms in this world, two large terms. There's authentication and authorization. Authentication is generally about figuring out who someone is. So you authenticate a request, you authenticate a user, which means you determine the identity, the authenticity of that request. Then there's authorization, when you have established who that is, that a request is authentic, that was the coffee, when you have that determined, then you can decide whether you're going to let that particular person do the respective operation. Now, let's start with something obscure, RFC 2617. That's the brother of, or sister, of RFC 2616, which is HTTP 1.1. And so this is the sister spec, and the sister spec defines two methods of authentication for HTTP. One is basic. Basic means send me username and a password in clear text. And the other one is digest, and that says, well, do a fancy little algorithm over the username and password. And don't send me the password, but actually send me a digest, send me a hash of that password. And so that it is fairly unique and can't be intercepted. Here, the server sends first a challenge, sends some data it has thought of, and sends that to the client. The client then does the computation and then sends that hash down. So two methods defined in RFC 2617. Now, you don't see RFC 2617, basic digest authentication, used on the web anymore. And the reason is it doesn't scale well. So let's go and investigate that first. So there's a client and there is a server. The client does a request providing basic authentication. Username, password flow in a header with that request. Now that requires that the server actually has a database. And that database has the username and the password in it. Or, better, because we're all better behaved, it is a hash that is stored here. And, so it's not the password itself, it's actually taking the password, running that through a hash algorithm, and then storing that hash. And because we're all good, well-behaved, we're actually taking a secret that's configured for the server, and we're salting that password with that secret. It's called salting, effectively combining the password with that secret. And we're storing that in the database so that if someone gets a hold of the entire database and downloads it, they don't simply need to run an attack on the hash to reverse the hash with a lot of computational power, but they would also need the secret to do that. Now, username and password in this way, you know, using a database with salted hashes, all good and fine. But the problem is, if you're doing this by RFC 2617, well, you have to do this for every request, which means that every request, no matter what it is, you're going to hammer this database. So that's obviously not a good idea. Let me talk about the brother first of that mechanism, which is even worse, the digest mechanism. Username and password is bad enough because it needs to go and send username and password and send that over HTTP over the wire. Because that would disclose the password, you ought to do this only over an HTTPS tunnel. So now you have an HTTPS tunnel that gets established once. But then, since you have keep alive, you can go and send with every request username and password. That's not so bad. for Digest, Digest works without that tunnel because it never sends the password in the clear. And it works with the server, so the client showing up and say, hello, here's some data, or hello, I want something. And then the server says, that is fine. Here's a challenge. Go and answer that question. Here's something. Go and take your password, right? Combine that with it, and give me the hash that comes out of this, and then I'm going to go and check this. What's worse about this is that it requires that in this database, the passwords are actually sitting in clear text. So even though it's more secure on the wire, it's actually horrifying on the back end because you actually need to have the passwords in clear text. So we don't use that. So people have come up with other methods. The most popular is the use of a security token service. This is one of those lots of obscure, terrifying security acronyms. Security token service is effectively a thing that allows you to determine who someone is, and then you trade that for a token, a string, that you can then give them, and they can go and use that. The parallel to that is that you go to your, whatever that is in your country or state, your citizen registry, and you say, this is me, here's my birth certificate, or here's my existing password. I want to have a new identity card. I want to have a new passport. The citizen office then goes through a more or less complex mechanism of determining who you are and then gives you that identity card. And that identity card you can then use at a store or at another office to establish who you are, because that is a genuine card that's being issued by the trusted authority to issue those. So the world's travel would not work without, you know, passports being issued in a trusted way by the respective country. So a security token service is kind of like the passport office, if you like, that other services trust that a passport, a token issued by that service will be okay. And the way how it's determined that it's okay is that it's typically digitally signed, and that the public part of that digital signature is known by the consumers. How does that look? So in ASP.NET, as part of the ASP.NET, you have, and in other systems, you have these providers, and you actually have an account management system and a forms authentication part where you can go and sign in. That's the simplest case of this. Very many systems have this. I'm taking ASP.NET because that's closest to home. And so you have this account management system, and then you have a forms authentication provider, and that forms authentication provider is effectively one of those security token services, even though it doesn't have that name. So that is part of that application. I'm going to call this STS. The difference here is now, instead of doing doing kind of a security exchange for every request, what you do is you're going to do that once as you log in. And so the client will try to talk to that resource. The resource says, I don't know who you are. And now there's two models. One is the service will refuse service and will say, no. You got to go and talk and go here and talk to this guy first, whether you can talk to me. That's a redirect. So you see that often is you hit some resource and then whoosh, you're being redirected into to the STS. The other model is if there's no cookie, if there's no identification, if you don't bring a passport, you're going to get the experience for the unauthorized user, sorry, the unauthenticated user. See, it fell into my own trap. For the unauthenticated user, where you get some general information but no details. So both models, in that case, the user experience would then show a login button, and then you can go and choose the login button, which takes you to this guy. So this guy is an STS. It might be an interactive one. It might be something that is just a web service that you call, depending on what it is, but the client walks up to that STS. Here, it establishes the identity. So it tells that STS, this is me. It claims this is me. So it claims this is the client, me sitting there, claim I am Clemens. Here's proof that I am Clemens. Here's my password. Or here's proof that I am Clemens. Here's a piece of data that I signed with a certificate that I own and that you have the public certificate for. Thousands of mechanisms, lots of terrifying security acronyms. There's a way. Typically, web apps, username, password, you talk to the SDS. And now for a correct username and password, the SDS, the signing page, will reward you with a reply that includes a cookie or token. That token contains information about who you are, and saying that in the broadest possible terms. So in that case, Clemens V, that's me. And then it will also say valid until now plus 4 hours. That's in that token. That token, the client can typically not see in that it is encrypted and signed. It's an obscure piece of data for the client. And it's a cookie, and that cookie is then made out to the target. So the way how this is passed is being, we don't need to go through all the Jedi motion, but typically that is passed as a parameter, as the it's getting redirected back, and actually the server, which gets that cookie, in fact, is then setting that as its own token. We don't need to go through all the details of that. What's important is you end up with this token, you end up with this cookie, and that cookie can be passed to that server because of all the Jedi motion that I haven't done because of all kinds of obscure and terrifying security acronyms. Now, as the client now interacts with the server, that token gets passed with every request. Now that is now making those things much more scalable, because instead of having, and much faster, because now instead of having to consult a database with every request, even if that were in the cache, what you now do is you effectively look at that token and you have a security key, a signing key, and probably encryption key that's stored on this machine, and that's the same one that is used for the STS, by the STS, to go and sign that token, which means you can go and go look into that token, and you can see, oh, this is Clemens, and because you're trusting, this guy is trusting that STS to do the right thing with the username and password thing, at least for 4 hours, it will go and determine, yep, that's Clemens V, and then can determine whether it wants to, and this is the authorization stage, whether it wants to let Clemens do whatever Clemens wants to do. This model now scales much nicer because you need to consult the database that contains the usernames and the passwords, salted hashes, ideally, only once per every 4 hours, right? Because you can also make that cookie stick for as long as that cookie is valid. Once every 4 hours, which means you're now reducing the load on that database, on the database that contains the usernames and the passwords, dramatically. So that is number one. That store is not going to get hit that often. Now, if you go and scale this out, if you scale out those services, if you have more load, that was not a good square. If you have more load, all those services, when they are configured with the same key, so they have the same signing key configured between them, you can come in with that token and you can come to base to each one of those servers. So if you give them the same identity, you set them behind the same domain, or from a HTTP, HTML perspective, so if all of those guys sit behind the same load balancer and with that, behind the same DNS name, that's all fine. They will all be able to get consume the same kind of token. That's the model, by the way, that we use for our service and for most of the services, is that we have an external service, and that external service establishes the identity and then goes and hits an arbitrary machine, and those machines are configured with the same signing keys, so that all works. Now, that STS, I talked about ASP.NET, that STS, the security token service, is something that is inlined, right? Forms authentication, sits inside of your ASP.NET app. So it sits factually, really, kind of as a little thing in the side of every single processing node that you have. And that's perfectly fine. So those guys, those little SDSs that are sitting in here, are hitting that database, but they're hitting them at a reduced rate. So that's the architecture that you automatically get from most web frameworks these days, is you don't no longer get a model where you are doing authentication on every request, but you're actually doing this over this token model. What we have today in the web architecture as the trend OAuth, another one of those security acronyms, and also WS Trust, which is still being used actually, and the foundation for a lot of the things that are still happening, they're happening in Active Directory. So it's in spite of it doesn't have too much of a good name in the web community, it's actually fairly used fairly often. WS Trust, WS Federation, all those standards that have been developed over the last decade, the web services standards. All these things are about making that STS more explicit, effectively eliminating it from within your application and fully externalizing it as a completely separate thing. Facebook Connect, Microsoft accounts, Yahoo identities, the Google identities, Twitter identities, all those that identities, and of course also Active Directory, Windows Azure Active Directory, as well as Windows Server Active Directory, all those services are about managing identities and managing all the things that need to be managed around those identities, including secrets management, password reset, all the things that need to be done around identity. And that's actually a very, very large field, including managing the scale of accounts. If you have, and managing authenticity of accounts. So if you see Google, if you see Facebook, if you say Twitter as large consumer-oriented directory services, and if you see Active Directory as the business-oriented set of directory services, that's kind of down the right direction. So they manage identity for you. And so what you can do in your systems is you can take that piece of management of users, of actually identity, establishing identity, and kind of outsource that to either the consumer-oriented services, Microsoft accounts, or the business-oriented services terms of Active Directory, for instance. With that, the STS becomes an external entity. What you will still have in your system here on this part, on this side, is profiles. Profiles about, you know, what is the user's preference, what does the user want from your application, but a profile really is part of your app, part of your application logic. The profile and the security information, authentication information of your user are actually separate entities, but they're lumped together kind of in many simpler systems. So now you're outsourcing kind of the authentication side, the establishing identity side to an external service. You can do that directly. So you can go and rely directly, let's say, on the Microsoft account infrastructure if you use the Live SDK. So you can make your application depend on the Microsoft account. The same thing, you can go and just make it depend on the Facebook account. So you can use Facebook Connect, use the Facebook SDK, and then you make your application's identity, the establishing of identities and those tokens, you make that dependent on Facebook, and you can use the Windows Identity Foundation SDK to actually go and do that very easily. What you can also do is you can use an intermediary. So there are federation services, there's a number of them. We have one in the platform called Access Control, and the Access Control service is one that has its own store for identities. So if you are using Service Bus, for instance, the product that I work on, we give you two pieces of information. We give you an account name, owner, and we give you a key. Those keys are not managed by Service Bus per se, but they're actually managed by ACS. And you can make more. And so it has a store, but it also, and that's where it actually starts shining, has federations with other services. So you can go and federate it with Google, you can go and federate it with the Microsoft account, you can go and federate it with Yahoo. And of course, you can go and federate this with Active Directory. I'm making funny squares here. You can federate it with Active Directory, and then through those federations, You can bring in the identities and then go and assign permissions or assign groups, depending on what you want to do, to the outgoing cookies, to the outgoing tokens that are then being issued by ACS. So that will go and effectively, you're scaling, you're making your system more scalable, right? By relying on infrastructure, on scale infrastructure that's specialized on dealing with identity, and you're actually tapping into a existing pool of identities, which is managed at massive scale if you think about Google or Facebook or Microsoft accounts, which is set up to deal with the number of authentications, and it's optimized by ways of these protocols for doing as many authentications that are actually needed, and will only do as many as you need to go and do this within the expiration time of your tokens. Expiration of tokens and character of tokens, let me talk about that briefly. The tokens that are issued have an expiration time. Expiration time here means that the client will hold on and can hold on to that token for as long as it's in here, and you can go in and time bomb the cookie so that it's valid for exactly for how long that token is valid, and then the cookie will go away and the token will go away, and then the token will have to be reacquired. That's one of the ways how if you go and work with, for instance, Facebook or Twitter, there's a timeout for the token so that every X days you basically have to re-authenticate because the cookie goes sour, kind of vanishes at that point. Until then, while that token is in flight, while that token is issued, the services will happily go and trust that token. That is fine, for mostly, but sometimes you have to do something against it. So let me talk about the quality of that token and how you go and defend against that. The tokens are mostly, these cookies or tokens are bearer tokens. Bearer tokens means they are literally like a passport that's given to you, and if for longer that passport is good, and you can go and present that passport, that's you. However, bearer tokens are like passports without, did I say password? I meant passport. Are like passports without pictures. So that if you bring it, you have they're an owner document, and if you are the bearer of that document, well, that's you are you. So if you are issuing tokens with extremely long lifetimes, a day or more, and you leak them, then anybody who can get their hold on that document, effectively that token, will be able to impersonate you with that token without needing to have your credentials. So that is a problem. Typically, in other ways, like in the W security standard, for instance, there is ways to negotiate tokens that are then bound to the request or bound to that session, but that's not what those bearer tokens are. So what you will always want to do if you have those bearer tokens, those cookies, is protect the path. So if you use this model, not only use security, you don't only use HTTPS for the path towards your STS, but also protect that cookie. Also make that traffic here HTTPS so you can go and protect it, so it's protected against interception. If you can't do that, then you need to make that token lifetime very short. Or if you don't do that, you might not care enough. If you do care somewhat, but the data, you are okay with the data being occasionally intercepted, which is kind of hard to believe, but you might. There might still be a need to go and effectively stop abuse of an account right away. So make this up. You're issuing tokens or HTTPS because you are protecting the username and password path towards the STS. And now you have these bearer token cookies, and you're doing the rest of your traffic through plain HTTP, which makes them susceptible to interception. Someone listens on the wire, this is very easy on Wi-Fi, takes the cookie, it's actually demonstrated, extension for Firefox that they can go and intercept those cookies with. You are intercepting the cookie, and then are using that as a service. Now you determine abuse. That cookie is good for 4 hours. What are you going to do to immediately defend against that? What you'll do is you're going to go and introduce a blacklist. A blacklist for particular accounts where you need to stop abuse right now. Someone is doing something that's very terrible, and there are a lot of things that people can do which are very, very terrible. For instance, someone has now intercepted, right? If someone brings up the criminal energy to actually go and intercept your cookies, then they will do also further bad things. So now someone comes in, intercepts a cookie, and now uses that cookie. Now they're authenticated to launch an attack against you. So what you'll do, you don't want to shut down the entire system, you don't want to make it unavailable to everybody else, but you need to stop that cookie, you need to invalidate that cookie, that token. That token is trusted. So you can't simply go and kill it, you have to do something about it. It's trusted, it's a valid token. So what you'll do is you introduce a blacklist. That blacklist is something that all the machines that you can get to will know about. You have a store, blacklist store, that as any node as it starts will go and load from boot and load that into a cache. The blacklist will not be very deep, because that's an exceptional mechanism. Typically, everything will go just fine, so this is an emergency mechanism. And then you'll go and distribute, as you need to blacklist something urgently, you are going to tell these caches, which are populated first from, at startup time, I'll have to tell those guys, hey, there's a new item to blacklist. The way you can do that very easily is using the PubSub system. For instance, in the case of Windows Azure, you can use a topic out of Service Bus, and then effectively just push the blacklisted item into the topic, and then have that distributed. So on every node, you kind of have a blacklist, likely fairly short list of items. And whenever you see a token, and that token is valid, and now the identity that's in that token is in on that blacklist, you're immediately going to reject that request. So that's one way to combine the convenience of the tokens with a mechanism where you don't have to fully trust those tokens, but have a way to go and defend against tokens if they have been issued, they're nominally trusted, but you have to stop them anyways. So you can go and effectively complement this model with a blacklist model. And that gives you overall a better security picture. Now, let's make this simpler. So we have, I talked about ACS, I talked about all these different federation models and how they help you and how they help you get a better scale. And that using this externalized model, using these cookies, which you're doing anyways if you're using ASP.NET forms auth, is a good idea. Now let's go and make this a little simpler, and let's talk about server to server for a moment. So sometimes, as you're going against those services, kind of in a server to server, now let me just go and do this all completely new. In a server to server fashion, you don't need to have all that fancy stuff, so to speak. So if a client, that really is a server. So you have a backend system for some Windows Azure service, and then you have a service, and that service is a resource you want to go and consume. And all this access control stuff is happening up here, and there's a trusted subsystem internal relationship between this service and that service. So think about Windows Azure Storage, for instance. Windows Azure Storage has a shared access key model. Shared access key means there's an access key there's a private key, there's also shared access key. Sorry, I'm just confused that for a second. So a shared access key model is you can actually go and share a key out with people who want to consume a resource, but typically using the regular access key to go and access that resource. Now, that resource has one key, primary, secondary key, which means it can only be used by a server resource, and then the server resource will go and do all its user management from up here. That simplifies the model. It is like a username and password. You come down here, you say, this is my account, and this is my key. And you're not bringing the key, you're using a digest model, you're using a particular algorithm to do this, so you're never sending the key in the clear. And now you're walking up to the service and say, here's my data, or I want to have this data. So effectively, you're reducing this to a username and password model at an account level, where the server here will deal with its user authentication up here and authorization up here, and then simply go and do a trusted subsystem model back here. In Service Bus, our service, we have something similar already on the server, and we're going to eventually also going to have that in the service. We're also going to allow you to go and use your own model. We have a variation of this, where you can go and effectively have the client act as their own STS. The relationship, how we go and create the relationship between the namespace and Service Bus and ACS, is that we have a signing key. That signing key is how we determine whether a token that comes over from ACS is valid, is something that we should trust. So the trick here is to go and take that signing key and tell you that signing key. Once you know that signing key, the client can actually go and issue their own tokens and says, oh, I want to go and listen and send to this particular resource. Here's a signature for that, and then give me the token. So it can go and self-sign those tokens. So by exposing that signing key to you, which the server does already, you can go and build your own STS in here, which is effectively just a function. And then that can go and have a trusted subsystem relationship between server and service. And actually, SharePoint in Office 365, which through workflow, its workflow capability, is using Service Bus. It actually has that kind of relationship with Service Bus already. So it is using that signing key in that internal relationship between the SharePoint related workflow capabilities and Service Bus. So that happens in SharePoint with the SharePoint workflow features built by the workflow team and the Service Bus. They have that kind of trusted subsystem relationship where they're signing their own keys and therefore don't need to rely on ACS. So it makes the model simpler. But then you'll say, wait, that picture now looks exactly like the picture you started with. Why is that not a problem when the username and password was a problem? Well, it turns out that in storage and in Service Bus and all those other services, if you come in with a request and you say, I'm Fred, that's my name, we have to load information anyways about you. So we need to keep information about that account in memory. We need to go and bill you. We need to roll up the usage information. We need to roll up diagnostics information. We need to attribute data to that particular account. We also need to find your resources. So you come in as with fred.servicebus.windows.net/myq. Well, we need to go and find that queue and route you to that queue. So there's stuff that is already hanging on your account. So there's metadata floating in the system that we have to load anyways, that we can't do the work without. So it is actually cheap. It is effectively free for us to go and have a key or two keys sitting straight with that metadata, and to load that as you come in with your request and you have your request signed, we can go and effectively say, oh, this is Fred. Here's the metadata for Fred. That's fine. Here's the key. Let's go and take a look at the key. Let's go and authenticate that's right, and then let that pass. So that is actually a fairly cheap operation for us, but it's very different from having a separate database with, you know, hundreds of thousands of users that we need to go against. So we don't need to do that, but effectively just need to do that at the tenant level, at the account level, to do that verification. Very similar to a single tenant application that you might write with ASP.NET, where you have a single key, a single signing key, that's sitting inside of your configuration for ASP.NET. Because the model that I just showed you, where you have all these servers with ASP.NET, what you'll notice is if you use these security models, forms authentication, etc., they will ask you to configure a shared a certificate or some shared key if you're using multiple servers. Well, the reason is because a token, cookie, issued by one of those servers needs to be understood, needs to be cryptographically understood by any of those servers. We need to have a shared notion of what that secret is, which means you need to go and configure this everywhere. So that's in a single tenant system that sits in config, that's where you look that up. And in a multi-tenant system, effectively as you are looking up the tenant information that you need anyways for all kinds of reasons, in that tenant information you already have that you already have the signing key, you already have that information sitting in there. So that's not more expensive to add that than running a multi-tenant system anyways. So, summary. Federated identity, you know, using this model where you have, let me just take that away. Using a model where you have a client and a separate security token service that you that all the services trust is the model that's favored by the entire web and is the only way to make those things scalable. Make that separation, have that separation in your systems. You kind of automatically already have that. If you're using ASP.NET, you already have that basics because you're using those cookies already. But it's worth, if you're making your systems larger, it's actually worth taking that extra step and thinking explicitly about the STS, because the STS and the way how you're dealing with those security tokens, how you're dealing with identity, is really, really worth the effort, especially as you're starting to think about multiple applications. If you start to think about having single sign-on across multiple applications, because then that's where the limitations of having this embedded in your one application show up. Because then, well, that little STS that's embedded in that app will rely on its local store. Which means now you're getting into the problem that everybody has to have their own notion of username and password, etc. per app. So it's actually better to take that completely out and move that into STS kind of infrastructure. For corporate applications, Active Directory is certainly a good idea. And then for consumer-facing applications, I would suggest let the consumer pick what identity they want to bring. We have with ACS, and we also have with the new capabilities in ASP.NET 4.5, a wonderful way to go and to offer 3, 4, 7 types of identities that people can go and use. So offer them all and let the users choose what identities they come in with. And keep in mind that identities mean that you get information about who that is, along with some metadata about who that is, but ultimately it is up to you what kind of profile you want to keep. So outsourcing, if you will, the authentication part to determine who someone is, that doesn't mean that you're also outsourcing the profile management. Profile is something that is separate, that also sits in your application that you can still keep track of. And sometimes you can go and seed the profile from information that you can get from Facebook, from information you can get from the Microsoft account, and then even keep replicating changes into your own profile store, but ultimately you're controlling your own fate with your own profile store, if you want to do that. So much from a architectural perspective, a plea for you to look at federated security and identity for your applications, because ultimately using that is a state management decision, and architecture is all about managing state in a smart way and managing authentication state, and leaving that to dedicated systems that are actually specialized about that is always a good idea. Thanks for watching this, and I'll see you next time.